Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Water. A resource much of us simply take for granted is something that if you lose access to, has catastrophic effects on our day-to-day life. The nonprofit Current, based in Chicago, delivers advanced research and market-driven innovations to enhance water resources and bridge the gap in commercialization of water technology. We're joined by Executive Director Steve Frankel. Steve, welcome to GreenSense.
Hey, great to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Steve, I understand you have a little background in radio. Tell us a little about your background and how you got involved with water.
Sure. About 25 years ago, I was a public radio reporter here in Chicago, and I focused on energy and environmental reporting, and that led to a 20-year career in clean technologies and sustainability, and that led me to be the inaugural executive director of a startup water technology innovation nonprofit based here in Chicago called Current. So I appreciate the opportunity to tell you more about it and what we're doing.
Well, your mission statement is to deliver advanced research and market-driven innovations to enhance water resources. That's pretty wordy. In simple terms, what does that mean? And what are some concrete examples of how you accomplish this mission?
Sure. Yeah, we're not trying to obfuscate with the wordiness. I guess what we're really trying to say is that water is a critical resource, and it's going to take a lot of technology innovation to help preserve and protect water resources, not just here in Chicago or in Illinois, but around the world. Water is obviously an essential part of life, and people take it for granted, as you mentioned. And if you don't have it, life comes to a screeching halt pretty quickly. And like we've seen with efforts to address climate change, there's been a lot of innovation in clean energy, from wind to solar power, to battery storage, to all sorts of other technologies to help make homes and businesses more efficient. And we really need to see the same kind of innovation on the water side. But one of the challenges is that we don't have the same kind of markets that have driven new technology out into the community, out into the economy on the water sector like we do in the energy sector. So in energy, you've got lots of viable markets. People trade energy. Energy has a price to it that causes people to pay attention to how much they use. And that creates incentives for conservation and innovation. And on the water side, we just don't have that. Water is considered a public good or a human right. It's an essential utility service, usually provided by the local municipality. And so we don't trade water the same way we trade energy. And we don't have the same kind of incentives that drive innovation. And people are afraid to screw up the water supply, so they don't want to take any risks with technology. So,
well, and I think, Steve, I think it's further complicated by water is very bifurcated. There's many vertical subsectors of the water market, from agriculture to water use for energy to wastewater to potable water, and they're not integrated. And on top of it, there's federal and state and local water policy. So it really makes a complex system. So can you give me a concrete example of some of the examples of how your organization has accomplished what your mission is?
Sure. So to try to solve this innovation gap in the water industry, we're really trying to help early stage companies and innovators get to market more efficiently, more effectively by overcoming commercialization barriers. And one of the ways that we do that is we try to help understand what is the water utility looking for to help improve their operations. What are water intensive industries like food and beverage companies looking for to improve how they use water? And can we help them find those solutions and help reduce the risk of bringing those technologies to market? So that's kind of how we look at the problem and the opportunity to advance commercialization in the water industry. And people sometimes talk about the valley of death when it comes to bringing new technologies to market, whether it's energy or water or any other sector. And that valley of death is that period of time where innovations can die because it's just hard to get customers to pay attention and take a risk on your technology. So that valley of death in water is wider and longer, deeper than most other sectors. And so we've tried to bridge that gap by helping to reduce that risk. And we do that by helping to validate technology using our own engineering and scientific capabilities, by partnering with universities to help analyze technologies and help that end user, that utility or industrial partner, get more comfortable with adopting new technologies than they would be on their own. So that's part of the role we play. We
also can you give me a concrete example of somebody you've helped that's a success story?
So, for example, we see Current and Chicago as a beachhead market for technologies from all over the world that are looking to innovate in the water sector. So a couple examples, we've been working with some Israeli companies that have very advanced technology to demonstrate those technologies here, right here in Chicago with our water utility, Chicago Water Department and the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, to bring cybersecurity technologies, to bring microbial wastewater treatment technologies that are innovative. These are a couple examples where we've done pilot projects to help show the promise of new technology and how it works and reduce the risk.
The Flint water crisis was brought up at the recent debate among Democratic candidates for president and as the tip of the iceberg. Are there several other Flints waiting to happen? And does Flint create opportunities for these entrepreneurs?
The Flint crisis was terribly unfortunate, and people are still suffering today as a result. But it was a man-made problem. It was not a result of the inherent nature of the water system. It was a mistake in how the water resource or the water utility system was managed. So I don't think there are a lot of Flint, Michigans that are going to pop up suddenly. We're going to have rolling crises across the U.S. That said, we have very old water infrastructure all over the United States and here in Chicago, and there's just been a lack of continued investment in our water systems, our water treatment systems, our wastewater systems, and that needs to change. And I think the public is recognizing that water infrastructure is a critical asset and that we're going to have to continue to invest in that.
People are attracted to shiny new things that are sexy. You know, water's just not sexy. It's been around for a long time. We know we need it, but you know, it's like your big toe. It's there, and you don't recognize it till you stub it. In many parts of the U.S., there aren't any apparent water problems. How do you get people to engage and pay attention to water issues?
Yeah, that's been a chronic challenge. I think, water has always struggled to get the attention it deserves. People take it for granted, and it's just ubiquitous and around us all the time. And we're blessed here in Chicago with a lot of freshwater resources. But I think people are really surprised to find out that even just maybe an hour outside of Chicago in cities like Joliet, they're running out of groundwater. They don't have access to Lake Michigan water, and they actually have a water quantity shortage that's coming in the next several years, and they're scrambling to figure out where they're going to get adequate water supplies from the city of Joliet. That's a major city, major urban area here in Illinois. So I think we can pretend that water crises affect places in the desert or in the West or in other parts of the world, but actually if we pay attention, we're finding important and serious water issues right in our backyard.
Most people think of water as potable drinking water, but water is used for so many more things. What sector of water do you think needs the most attention?
I think people are often surprised to realize that the agricultural sector is by far and away the greatest water user in the United States. I think that's true around the world. Somewhere between 70 and 80% of all water used in the United States is for agricultural purposes. And we've just failed to find efficient solutions to help the agricultural sector use water more efficiently. And I think we could learn a lot from the Israelis, for example. Israel is the global leader in water conservation and water recycling. They reuse over 90% of the water that they use for industry and the economy and agriculture through drip irrigation and other technologies. And if we adopted some of those techniques here, we could do a tremendous job in improving water efficiency and conservation.
Many say that we don't have a water shortage. We have a water management crisis. How is technology going to help avoid or fix the water management crisis?
I think that's a basically fair observation. I think it's really about getting the right water to the right place at the right time at the right level of quality. So we have plenty of technology to clean water to any level of purity that we need. It's really a matter of cost, efficiency, and technology deployment. And so I think that's an important thing for people to understand, whether it's their local water utility who's managing the water supply, or an industrial water user, or a rural community or agricultural water user, that it's really about respecting the resource, taking care of it, and deploying the technologies we need to make sure that we have it where we want it, when we want it, at the quality we need it. Because there's no new water to be manufactured. All the water that we have is the water that's always been here on Earth.
You say that Chicago's an ideal entry point for North America's water technology market. Tell us why you believe this is the case.
Sure. And Chicago's a great place for water technologies from all over the world to get entry to the U.S. market. We've got a tremendous history of water innovation in the Chicago area, dating back to when we reversed the Chicago River over 100 years ago. We've got global leaders in engineering firms, water technology companies like Nalco out in Naperville or Sloan Valve out in Franklin Park. And so that tradition of engineering excellence and water innovation and technology innovation is tremendous history to build on. And we also have the world's largest water filtration plant here in Chicago, as well as the world's largest wastewater treatment plant in Stickney, Illinois, as part of the MWRD system. So whether it's public infrastructure or private industry, we've got great assets here in Chicago.
We've covered the water topic since we started GreenSense 10 years ago. And one of the common issues that comes up is that potable water is just too cheap. If water costs more, there would be a bigger investment and there'd be more technologies coming into the marketplace. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's absolutely true. If any commodity isn't priced properly, people are going to overuse it and take advantage of it in a way that's probably inefficient and not sustainable. And so I think we've struggled to find ways to price water in a way that's going to change people's behavior. And that's an ongoing challenge. We've seen water rates increase here in the Chicago area, and that's been necessary in order to generate the revenue needed to invest in our critical infrastructure. And the water might be free, but treating it and conveying it to your home or to your business and then treating that wastewater after you've used it is not free. And that continues to be an issue that communities around Chicagoland and beyond have to face.
On the other hand, conceptually agreeing with the statement I just made, nobody wants to pay more for water. So how do you balance that paradox of it's not going to be used efficiently, it's going to be hard to get technologies to come into the market and make a profit, but nobody wants to pay more for water?
It's always difficult for utility leaders or elected officials to raise utility rates. We've seen on the energy side a greater willingness to pay for renewable energy, for wind and solar power, because we recognize that climate change is a critical issue and we need to reduce carbon emissions in order to slow the effects of climate change and hopefully reverse them. I think we need to have that same realization on the water side, that we have to be stewards of the resource, we have to invest in our infrastructure, and that's going to take investment just like any other public good or critical part of our economy and infrastructure. It's going to take investment, and it's going to require that people do pay incrementally more for water over time.
Steve, Current is a nonprofit. How do you generate income to support yourself and your staff?
Current is a nonprofit organization, and we are fortunate to be supported generously by the City of Chicago, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, local universities, industry, local foundations, and so we're a membership-based organization, and we serve the public good, and we also help industries conserve and improve water resources. So we welcome water-intensive industries from any sector, whether it's food and beverage, oil and gas, pharmaceutical, to join Current and help us help you find innovative solutions to your water use and water challenges.
That's Steve Frankel, Executive Director of Current. You can find out more about their work at currentwater.org. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
The idea of soldiers turning their swords into plowshares goes back to the book of Isaiah in the Bible, but it's being lived out in new ways today as U.S. veterans transition back into society from battle. Karen Archiplay, co-founder of Archie's Acres, which trains military vets to become organic farmers, joins us now all the way from Escondido, California. Karen, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're going to have to tell us your story on how you worked in the fashion industry and what inspired you to launch Archie's Acres.
Okay, well, I was a hat maker for many years, and I always say I prayed to God to be a millionaire. God misunderstood, and there I was, a milliner, and we're still working out the list. But my husband actually had joined the Marine Corps, and so he was part of 3-1 Lima, and when he came back from his third tour in Iraq, he was part of the invasion, the Battle of Fallujah, and his third tour was Haditha, just as that became a hot spot. And we built our first greenhouse during that time. And at the completion of that, we realized that we could match his income as a 3-1 infantry, squad leader. thank you, 3-1 squad leader. And we just basically created our program. So he almost reenlisted because so many of the people he'd served with were reenlisting because they couldn't find employment.
So making the transition from fashion to farming, was that happened over a short period of time? Was it abrupt? Was it a long transition? Talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to say it was abrupt. We moved from Los Angeles to Escondido, which is North County, San Diego. And my husband was in the military at the time. I was here working the farm, getting things set up until he came home in the following April of 2006. And so basically farming took over. I went into real estate for a short while. I was a loan officer, queen of the 30-year fix. And as that bubble burst, we actually were in full-fledged farming and training.
What inspired you to go beyond farmers producing vegetables to farmers producing additional farmers? Because you're really training the farmers, not just producing the vegetables.
That's correct. We grow farmers here. The way that happened is my husband almost reenlisted, and that was not okay with me. So we made an agreement that if we could work with the people he had served with in agriculture, which he did not believe the military would embrace, that he would agree to stay here and work on a farm. And so we created the Veteran Sustainable Agriculture Training Program, which is now known as Archie's Institute for Sustainable Agriculture, in partnership with Cal Poly Pomona.
That's really great. And what is it about farming that's therapeutic for veterans?
Well, you know, interesting, this is not a new idea. After World War II, that's how the Bureau of Land Management came up with an idea to match our war weary with farming, agricultural land. And the whole thing is that agriculture doesn't care how you feel or what you've been through. As long as you feed the plants, they'll feed you and the community around you. And it is naturally therapeutic. There's neurotransmitters in your fingers. And when you're working with the plants and the soil or the, in our case, hydro organic, you know, it's naturally therapeutic. You're making things grow.
That's pretty poignant, what you've just mentioned. And what do you find unique or so inspiring about working with the U.S. military veterans?
Well, people like my husband, I will tell you, they serve our country. They're proud. They're really they're mission driven. And so being able to give them the mission of reinvigorating the family organic farm throughout America, it's something that has been embraced. And we are so proud of our alumni, and we're proud to get to be part of that.
My guest is Karen Archiplay, co-founder of Archie's Acres, who trains soldiers to be farmers. Well, Karen, I'm an indoor vertical farmer, and our show here is all about the economics of sustainability. Not all green is good. It's got to make economic sense. And you've
right.
put together a 30-minute documentary about Archie's Acres. The students who are learning to be farmers are told of the great risks involved in running their own farms. And I know firsthand farming's not simple, especially when you're trying new ideas. Talk a little bit about the movie and the risks involved with being a farmer.
Thank you. Well, the movie was actually made by Tribeca, who hired Efren Film to produce it. And it is, like you said, 30-minute documentary. And it just follows a few students through our class and to see where they go on to after the class. And for us, we were really honored that they did that, because the reality is farming is a challenge. And there are times, and I always say, you know, my husband was a combat vet. And so when he came back out of fierce battle, it could be very boring, very quick. Well, let me tell you, farming's not boring. Self-employment is not boring. Because you think, we're not going to make it, and then, oh, we made it. So that happens too often. But for us, our relationship with our alumni begins on the day they graduate, because that's when they need us. They need us the day the rubber hits the road.
So do you have a success story that you could share that shows how a farmer student overcame the risks of being a startup farmer and became successful?
Oh, we have so many. We have so many.
Give me your favorite one.
We have Jason Smith. Jason Smith is in Alaska, and he took an area that only flew in food, and he took over an old factory building and literally is feeding his community now. And now I've heard there's two or three other hydro-organic farmers doing the same thing in that area. And all I can say is bravo. That's awesome. We have Mango Mike in Japan, and he's growing mangoes in a greenhouse because of their weather. And I know he's been riding out the storm, and it's awful. But the fortitude and that total stick with it is just awesome. It makes me proud. Endeavor Shen is in Encinitas right here in San Diego, and he's growing both orchids, and then he also does some lettuce plants with hydro-organic, and I'm really proud of him as well.
That's Karen Archplay, co-founder of Archie's Acres. We have provided a link to the very inspiring 30-minute documentary about their program on this week's show notes. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. Thanks for joining us on Green Sense. We know you have lots of choices out there, and we appreciate you putting your time into learning more about how you can make the world more sustainable. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Thanks for listening to Green Sense. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.